Hello, sports fans. Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown live show, starting a little bit early with Combo getting in there, but we'll maybe edit that out for later. But an amazing game four, epic finish. Hard to believe how that all worked out based on what we saw in the first half and then in the third quarter. As always, I'm joined by Andrew Combo Sellup, who is ready to get down and dirty here with his mic and everything like that. Combo, great to see you. I take it you saw that game.
I saw the game. Entertaining, very entertaining.
It was actually kind of like stressful, I thought, like down the stretch there. I guess Mike Malone had some sort of Vulcan mind meld with Jokic and left him in there with five fouls for the last, I don't know, it was like 7 minutes of the game, maybe. Usually you wouldn't see that, but I guess ended up being a really ballsy play because he kept them in the game and he got some scores that they needed on offense for him.
As a kid, I went to Manhattan College basketball camp, and I'm not sure if it was the Fran Fischilla or the John Leonard one, but Mike Malone was coaching, and he never showed that side of his personality when he was cursing the ref out tonight, man. That was crazy. He was, and you could hear everything. You couldn't hear it, but you could lip read everything he was saying, man. He was going at him.
Yeah. Well, he took that technical on purpose, right? That was clear probably, to me that yeah. You know, the referees, I thought, struggled in this game. They really, I mean, it's a tough knockout game. You know, the Lakers are going to claw and scratch as much as they possibly can to you know, stay in this game. But, you know, they blew a whole bunch of calls, I felt like. And, in fact, I'm having a discussion with Chip right now about the kickball. Apparently, I thought it was a foul. See, I was trying to catch up sometimes when I screenshot something and I'm trying to catch up and I don't hear all the announcing. So there's that drive where Rui strips the ball with his hand and then his foot kicks the ball afterwards. And the ref Tibbin comes in and calls it a kickball. And I thought they called it a foul. So it didn't make sense because they came back. They didn't shoot free throws. So that all now makes sense. At least it was a kick. But to me, when you bring your arm down and you're in the air like that, your legs will come up, you know, sort of an equal opposite reaction there. And once he strips it, it kind of feels like, you know, and he's in the air, he's not intentionally kicking it, but I suppose you could argue either way on that one. But there's a bunch of weird calls. They missed one. I mean, they had one on Jokic who stripped LeBron in the first half, and the replay was like he just took his arm off and they didn't call it. And you know, but I think that both teams had equal gripes with the refs, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Nuggets felt like they were getting the short end of the stick, so they just started hacking the crap out of the Lakers, and they were getting called on it. So yeah. It was some tough. I mean, look, man, at full speed, it's a little bit different than us watching it on TV and then watching the replay. It is a very tough job. The refs didn't do an absolute great job, but, I mean, the team that should have won. We obviously saw that today because LeBron James had an epic game. And they still lost. Like, so I think if you play this series 100 times, I mean, the Nuggets will win like 95 of them, 90. They're just a better basketball team.
That is true. And that's another great point. I mean, they're better. I mean, I'm trying to think of like what else they could have done, what the Lakers could have done. You know, they stuck with D'Lo for way too long. And that really, really hurt them. And I think that they could have. I mean, these games were close. And, you know, a couple possessions here or there, it could have been, you know, 2-1. And then all of a sudden there's some pressure and, you know, the Lakers are at home to, you know, maybe tie it up. So a lot of things can happen that way. I mean, it was funny. Remember when J.R. Smith did that dumb thing at the end of game one of the finals in 2017, maybe that was what it was, I think. Yeah. You know, if they were to have stolen that first game, I mean, I think they got swept. They lost, maybe they got beaten 5. Like, it just changes the entire tenor of a series. And so if you get one of those because you've managed something a little bit better in a lineup-wise, you know, it could end up being – it could change the whole thing. But, you know, it was – LeBron, it was great to see him come on fire in the first half and was hitting threes. They had really no answer. And then it's – you know, it's great. I'm doing the Celtics video right now. I needed to get it done before the game started. I didn't, so I'm going to drop it, like, you know, 6 a.m. on East Coast, you know, in a few hours. But you'll see how the Celtics do not understand how to manage a game and how to target with a weak link in the defense. But then you watch LeBron do it. And by the way, you watch Butler do it. Those guys are experts at it. They really know how to run their offense to make sure they get the best shot they wanted. And they continue to attack Jokic after the fifth foul. And that was just, you know, great. And I felt like Denver kind of ended up zoning a little bit at that point to try and take the pressure off of Jokic in the last couple of possessions. I don't know if you noticed that. I think they had Brown which Brown? No, who do they have?
Bruce.
Maybe it was KCP, was like just hovering right there in the elbow, right next to Jokic to kind of protect him and make LeBron pass the ball instead of attack him and get a layup or get a foul. So that was big, and that's what a good experienced team with a good coach does.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see this Denver organization finally get to a finals, right? I mean, I think that's a good thing. I'd like to ask you a question about, just from a coaching standpoint and an organizational standpoint, do you feel that, like, we don't give enough credit to the organization and the coaching staff for making Jokic a point center? Like, is that an obvious move? Like, is there a chance that he goes to a different organization and they never put the ball in his hands?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when Nurkic was there and Jokic was there. I think I almost got an interview with him. I ended up doing like Gallinari, I think, when he was there instead of Jokic. I was like, I still can't believe it, because maybe he was a second year. And so we kind of sensed that he had the passing ability, but I don't know if in the very beginning, I have to kind of rack my brains now, if they let him like bring it up, because I want to make a good point about this. And then we'll get back to the question, which is, it's so, as a coach, it's exciting to see him able to grab a tougher rebound at the front of the rim and then just push the ball immediately, because it forces a mismatch almost every time. If you notice when he did that and he pushed it quick, they had like weird matchups that they couldn't handle with mismatches that the Nuggets could then exploit right away. So that was really important. You know, one of them was Reeves, stuck on somebody, or like Aaron Gordon had like Schroeder on. Oh, no, that was another one. I'll have to go through it. You'll see there's a number of times where they got cross matched so badly that they got a really good shot. And that's what Jokic does for you. So, yeah, I don't think so. I don't know if Mike, like a non-Mike Malone coach, does that. And is willing to trade Nurkic, who had ability to and was good. Remember, once he got to Portland, they took off and played really well that year, and he was a vital part of that. So they had to choose, and so they chose Jokic, and that might not have been as easy a call then. And then, again, I agree. To let him do that was huge. Now, he was doing that in Europe, so there was some, precedent for him to do that. So it wasn't like completely somebody made that up in the NBA. But yeah, to have the cojones to do it was huge, and credit should go to I suppose Mike Malone.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he'd be a great player no matter where he went, but who knows? Maybe he doesn't get the MVP somewhere else, like where they just don't put the ball in his hand. So I think it's a combination. Obviously, Jokic is all time great at this point. Like, it's pretty obvious, but I do think the organization, the coaching staff, deserves some credit as well.
For sure. I mean, listen, the way they designed the offense is terrific. And the funny thing is they're running offense from like 1963. That's what the Celtics ran when the Cousy and Bill Russell teams did. A lot of the high post entry, split cuts on the weak side, it's all from the original game. Like, these guys who invented the game were so smart, and who developed the tactics of the game in the 20s and the 30s. These guys understood how to do this, how a rectangular court can exist with five players moving around a ball in a basket. That's what's exciting to me about, knowing the history of the game and how they've merged a lot of the fundamental movement that they had designed way back in the day with all of the modern skill level. So now you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. And I think that the Nuggets, the Warriors, the Kings, the Heat, also, they're showing us this now, all the sort of common actions that we had seen from back in the day, but with this incredible shooting and dribbling ability. That's why they're scoring so well. We have a super chat, so let's talk about that for a second. If you want your question answered on the show, super chat is the way to go over on YouTube. It helps us keep this show going, and we get to give you some big hype on the screen. So I now need to go scrolling down here. Okay, here we go for the Drew Show. Thank you so much, Drew. I guess he's a big Drew Carey fan. That's Drew Carey, right? Is that his name? Why does that sound weird? It's Drew Carey, right?
I think so.
The host of Price is Right, whatever. Why is it? Anyway. Tell how a Celtics loss doesn't cost them a GM, the coach, and Jaylen Brown. This run is over for them. It's a rebuild around Tatum. Good luck with that. So I wonder if you hacked my computer, the Drew Show, because the end of my video talks exactly about that, where – not that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, I mean, I think they proved they could play together and then they can make that work, get all the way to the finals. But I think it's over. I think Brown probably needs a change of scenery. Did you say that last night, by the way?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely said that. I think like he becomes a superstar somewhere else. I'm a big believer in him. I really am.
I mean, I still kind of am, but man, I have a little montage of turnovers, and it's like, you know, the superstars do not make turnovers like you see Tatum and Brown do in the conference finals. You can't have that, you know. Now, the coach is probably going to be sacrificed as well. I don't know if he was, you know, had I don't think it was his time. He's not ripe yet. The GM, you know, I don't know. That is another interesting question. Who's the GM now of the Celtics? I can't remember.
Their last coach.
Oh yeah, Brad Stevens.
Before Ime. Yeah.
How about this for irony? This hit me, and I didn't put it in the video, but here I'll share it with you guys now. By the way, please wake up early, watch it at 6 a.m. Eastern time if you're up in that time, because that really helps me get the view velocity going. But I went to Butler and visited Butler for a weekend and watched him run his practices way back in the day when Brad Stevens was there. And he had kind of I don't know if it was his that he invented it, but he kind of, I think, refined the overload of defense to one side. And I remember talking to him about it over that weekend, just sort of saying, you know, that shift was so extreme where he'd have like five defenders over on the midline, the strong side of the ball. And I said, like, well, what happens if you play like a team that runs Princeton or something that's going to kill you in the backside? He goes, well, then we can adjust, but nobody wants to do that anymore. They all want to dribble the ball in place and run pick and roll. So we'll load up. And it's basically what the Heat are doing to them. It's kind of fascinating. And they're not adjusting well at all. They're pre-positioned so overloaded towards Tatum and Brown from like even one pass away, violating all my rules. But then again, when you had Jaylen Brown shooting 10% from three in the series and everybody else is shooting 25 or 30%, then yeah, you can completely overload one pass away, dare him to shoot, and then you can adjust later.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a guy who's an exceptional passer, I mean, that doesn't work as well because they could hit that weak side corner on demand, like a Luka Doncic, right? Like he'll just dissect that and hit people for wide open corner threes.
The strong side corner is open too, but they haven't really done it. And they've done it a couple times. I know like Derek White got one and I think he made one, he missed another one, and they're good at recovering. So they are pretty good at recovering, but you know, good pro shooters on it, you know, who are, you know, tuned up, that should be able to light that up. And they haven't been, so it's a nice confluence of events. And you can see Spoelstra will like move farther and farther. We'll adjust if we have to, but if not, and it gets into their head. And this is what we're seeing now in the modern game. We're going to see the collective brain take over when teams start to press and feel pressure to make threes if they miss a few. It spreads. It becomes a contagion across the entire team, which is why it's so important as a coach to be able to train your players to avoid that. And at the very least, do not add to the agita and to the insanity of when your players start missing threes. You need to be able to shake them out of that. So the Drew Show, I agree. I think that they're going to rebuild around Tatum. They can get a lot for Brown. I also said they should just trade Smart. I think I said that last night, maybe in this live show, but I say it in the video, so I'll just say it again now. There's a ceiling on a team that starts Marcus Smart and plays in heavy minutes. There's just going to be a ceiling. I know they got to the finals, and he finally put some things together, but he then, you know, does some of the same stuff that we can keep seeing that are just confounding mistakes and are going to hold the team back. If you really want to get all the way to the top, he can do it if he's playing 24 minutes a game, you know, even as a starter, but you have to be able to mitigate more. He can't be playing the 32, 34 minutes, whatever he's playing now. He just makes too many mistakes and from a key position that you can't have. So, Drew Show, thank you so much. I will probably see you on Twitter, too, if I'm not mistaken. That's the same Drew Show. Looks like it, but we'll see him there. But thank you so much. And let's see here. Let's get to our next Super Chat. Bron, is best friend of the breakdown, is not even a good enough term anymore for Bron. Uncle? Uncle of the breakdown? I don't know. We'll have to come up with a much closer term. But here's what he asks from Canada. Who does Murray and Jokic remind you of stylistically? Constant DHOs, 5-1 pick and rolls. That's so fun. Stylistically, Dirk and Jason Terry are probably Nash. Okay. You go.
I think some Kings stuff goes on, like the old Kings, right? When you're talking about Weber and some of their guards, I think we see some of that because Weber was such a great passer. He obviously wasn't the passer Jokic is, but, you know, and those guards were dynamic he had with Jason Williams and even Mike Bibby.
Yeah, no, that's a really good call. You know, Gary Harris had this kind of symbiosis with Jokic before Murray, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. or maybe at the same time with Murray. But it wasn't the same because Murray wasn't quite doing all the little handoff stuff that they do now, where he comes up from underneath and around, and then they play the two-man game. It feels like they didn't do that as much as they do now, whereas Harris kept cutting back door every time, and he'd hit him. But as far as like the two-man game stuff, yeah, I mean, Nash and Amari Stoudemire could very well be part of that too. It's all rooted in the D'Antoni stuff. You go back to like Cousy and Russell would do a little of that too, you know, a little hypo stuff. And again, the point we're making is that this is sort of they're playing a style of basketball that we've seen just for so long. Even though it's a modern game, even though there's a lot more threes that were being shot, the movement and the teamwork going on is so great. I'm telling you, I was showing the kids, you know, the 10, 11, 12, 13, and into the high school kids where I'm coaching on Saturdays, all of that action. And I love it. It's so good. We see the Heat do it so well, too, where they come off of that handoff. All they have to do is show the left-right footwork. They don't even have to do a shot fake, and they're going for it. They're converging on them, and they just boop, hit the little pocket pass, and you're off in the races. So just terrific, really fun offense that makes it really difficult. And by the way, what's interesting about Denver and Miami, since they do run a lot of that same action, they should be prepared defensively to guard it. So now we're going to find out like how well that will work. If anyone's going to guard Denver in those actions, I think the Heat will probably do as good a job as anybody in the league.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting matchup. I think we're assuming that the Heat will be in it with Denver and the Heat, because I know everybody's talking about how nobody will be interested because of the small markets. But from a basketball standpoint, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, Stockton and Malone is interesting because I don't get the same vibes in my hard drive of my brain trying to picture.
It's more rigid. It's more rigid and less flow.
Yeah. I mean, they did a lot of sort of UCLA high post. They did a lot of like triangle-ish or Princeton stuff, but I don't remember them. Like, I don't remember seeing like, Malone at the high post of like Stockton, like running around for handoffs. I see much more of like, he just go up and set a ball screen for him and roll. And then they come back or whatever, you know what I mean? Screen, re-screen stuff. I can't picture that. So I might be wrong, but that's not my picture right now in my brain.
Well, I mean, Jokic was so much more a facilitator than Karl Malone was. And Murray and Stockton aren't even of the same mold. Like Stockton's a pure point guard. And Jamal Murray's not even really a point guard in a lot of ways. He's more of a combo guard or a two guard or a scoring guard. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like just their style of play individually doesn't even match up, you know?
Yeah. We had another good question coming up, and I'm actually like kind of skimming through the game right now to get to the third quarter, because the question is, let's say, and then thank you so much, Bron, for that awesome question. Love it. But the next super chat is Barth 3400 from Canada. Yeah. Hey, thank you, Hoser. Why was LeBron less aggressive in the second half? Now, you know, I was kind of scanning it, watching it, trying to see everything that's going on. So I'm trying to picture now exactly what was going on with why. You know, we see this with LeBron, right? LeBron will get completely disconnected from the offense. He'll just throw the ball to someone else, let them bring it up, and just sort of be detached. And it could very well be he gets tired. He doesn't have the energy to do that. I mean, that's probably a good answer. What do you think?
Question again?
Why is LeBron so, aggressive in the third
quarter? Yeah, he was tired. Like, you saw him grabbing his shorts after a defensive play. I think he was guarding Jokic, you know, and then he was talking to the refs a little bit. He was exhausted. I mean, the guy is older now, and he dropped 31 in the first half. So, I mean, he just had nothing left at a certain point, even though he was still getting to the basket and scoring here and there. Like, that first half took a lot out of him. And, you know, he needed help down the stretch. And guys were getting looks, but they just weren't knocking down shots.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually like the first opening play of the second half. You know, he buries himself in the corner, and then you know, AD came over to maybe hand off to him. And he didn't move, and AD dribbles the ball off his foot. So, you know, that's what happens. And I think tired is certainly probably the most the clearest answer for that. You can't be tired in a knockout game, unfortunately. But when you're 38, you played that many, you know, seasons and that many extra seasons in the postseason. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to do that. And also, I think he knew he needed it in the fourth quarter. So the third quarter, he was going to make sure he conserved as much energy as possible. And unfortunately, the rest of the Lakers decided to miss a bunch of layups. Now, that was it fascinating to me, how many layups they missed. And then, you know, when I do the breakdown tomorrow, whenever it is, as quickly as I can, you're going to see so many good three-point shots in the first half that the Nuggets missed that you sensed they were going to start making them, and maybe even some of the hard ones too. And so you combine giving up those open shots like they were doing. They were not playing very good defense in that first half, but they were there because they were missing those shots. So you combine that with then you miss a bunch of layups, and now that then they come right back. They get enough of a lead. They felt good about themselves because, you know, Denver, if you kept them down enough, if you kept them down 8-9 points throughout that third quarter, you might have had something there in the fourth where they're kind of just shaky. They can't, you know, quite get a hold of themselves. But then it turns out that the Lakers kind of got shaky toward the end, and they were falling apart a bit and then ultimately broke. So, again, LeBron is, we're seeing the decline. You know, the decline is slow, and it is still very impressive what he can do, especially at that age. No one else has ever done that. We'll ever do this. But it is what it is. And as a result, they're going to need, more help, which is an interesting thing for the Lakers. So what are they going to do with AD?
Yeah. And right. Aaron Gordon played really good today. I think that's something that we haven't talked about yet because, you know, he was knocking down threes. He was a willing shooter. And the way he finishes underneath the rim, like his athleticism off too. Just incredible. Like he gets up like a rocket ship. Just such a great role player. I mean, they got so many great role players at Bruce Brown and him and KCP.
And he's so physical.
Defensively, LeBron. I mean, Bron obviously had a great game, but he was playing, you know, he was playing deep.
Yeah. And he's wearing LeBron out that way too. So he can absorb a lot of that LeBron energy and hold his ground better than pretty much. There's very few players in the league, I think, that can do that as well as Aaron Gordon could. So, you know, that's the guy that you needed to get if LeBron was going to be in your way. And I know that that's why they got him originally. And he came through again for them down the stretch, just kind of wore him out. And then, you know, yeah, he was pretty good offensively. If you see him rush his three, he tends to make those. And when he hops into the three, he gets much better rhythm. It's when he doesn't and he gets a two motion thing and it's really kind of ugly is when he can. And hopefully somebody can just unlock that a little bit, because if he could ever get to 36-37% from 3-point land, watch, he did that already. I know he's had fits and starts in his career, but let me just check really quickly what Aaron.
And also, I think during the regular season, the shot was looking a little bit better than it has in the playoffs. Even though he was making them today, it kind of looked a little more two motion than it did during the regular season.
Yeah, so he was second highest in his career this year at 347. Almost there. He just needs to get another point or two up there, and then he's going to be like just a real tough two-way player that a championship team needs. And that's, you know, I'm sure he'll be crucial for them in the finals.
He made one in the corner that I was surprised he made because it just didn't seem like it came off his hand right. Like the transfer was bad. Go ahead.
It looked like a two-handed shot almost. Like it felt like he just kind of threw it with both hands. It was weird.
Right. I was surprised that one went in.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Barth. They're rolling in here. We've got to catch up here because we're behind now. Forgive me for the delay, Ven, but thank you so much, Ven. Lakers need better offense. Yeah. What do you think? Do they need better offense?
I mean, they made a defensive play today by taking D'Lo out, even though he hasn't been good, and putting Rui in. So they obviously thought it was the other way around. But what team doesn't need more offense?
He's talking about the actual what they're running on offense, right?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, look, LeBron-centric teams, this is how they look.
That's why I thought, like, I like this LeBron team maybe more than almost all the other ones.
Why? Because he played off the ball a little bit more now?
Yeah, and you know, even though I said he gets disconnected at times and buried in the corner or whatever, he does participate on the weak side and moves a little bit too. And I was looking at the ATOs, and it's all very much, I mean, everyone's kind of running a very similar version of offense, you know, handoff, ball screens, reversal, drive kick stuff. So, and they're doing all of that, and they're doing stuff with high posts with AD. So I thought that they did a pretty good job sort of stitching it all together. And as a result, guys like Austin Reeves could find a lot of opportunities himself. He's made a lot of money for himself this year. Mm-hmm. And I think the Lakers are not going to make the same mistake they did when they lost Caruso, and they're going to keep Reeves. If I were the Lakers, I would probably trade AD. I would, you know, this is the highest value you're going to ever get for him now. I think he's only going to go down from here. So you might as well trade him now and get the most you can from him, for him, and give LeBron maybe one more shot at it. You know, they're talking about, Kyrie maybe coming to the Lakers. You see that?
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, who are you trading AD for? Dame Lillard?
Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe that's part of the thing, like the Kyrie trade or something. Or is Kyrie unrestricted?
Yeah, but he made a handshake deal that he's going to go back. That's what they're saying.
Oh, we did? Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, but, you know, it's Kyrie. But anyhow, the bottom line is with the Lakers offense, I thought it was fine. I thought what they did was fine. And you know what? I mean, overall, let's just really quickly look at what their offensive rating was. Because that I'm kind of curious in my mind's eye. I'm picturing them up there for the regular season at least. So the Lakers ranked, oh, you know what? Am I wrong? Lakers ranked, oh, they were 19th in offensive rating. So that's actually an interesting, you know, for the regular season, a compelling point. They did miss a bunch of games by their big guys. But let's see, they were 113.9 offensive rating in their regular season. And then in the playoffs, they don't have tonight's game, probably not. But they were, where are the Lakers here? Lakers 112, so it even went down. I mean, and there should be a little bit of a drop generally when you're playing against tougher defenses, so I understand that. But yeah, that was that's interesting. They weren't as efficient as they need to be without question if they wanted to make a deeper run. So good call, Van. Hopefully they'll develop that for next year. Thanks, Jason Ben. Kelly, thank you so much, Jason. Oh, come back on here. Thank you. Very generous super chat. Really, really appreciate it. Offer AD for either Kawhi or Jaylen Brown. Lowers the ceiling, but it raises the floor. Kawhi, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. Sorry, Kawhi. Wouldn't even get near him. But Jaylen Brown, we're talking about him being traded. We're talking about AD being traded. What do you think? Is that an interesting matching?
I feel like AD would play better off LeBron than Jaylen Brown does. And I don't think that's the place to unlock Jaylen Brown, in my opinion. But, I mean, he's a great player that could help anybody. But that's not really where I want to see Jaylen Brown play.
I hear you. I mean, look at Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves can exist that way. Jaylen Brown could do that and be even better.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown's a higher level player than Austin Reeves, but Austin Reeves does a little bit better job of connecting the team, playing off, moving without the ball, really good in pick and roll. He's just a different type of player than Jaylen Brown. I think he complements LeBron a little bit better.
That's fair enough. And also, if they keep Austin Reeves and start him, then it's interesting who they're going to start alongside him in the backcourt. Like a guy like Kyrie would probably diminish Reeves' opportunities, which would be too bad because he did, you know, he's sneaky good like that. Really good passer too. Almost to the point where like, okay, great. Have him be like the point guard, you know, although we know LeBron will do a lot of that too. And then, you know, get a bigger guard who, you know, maybe just a 3-and-D guy.
Well, also it depends on what big you could get, right? With Jaylen Brown from the Celtics, I don't know, or somewhere else. Like you would have to build around that in a different way because you would be losing so much on that front with AD gone.
Yeah, like it would probably be something like Robert Williams and Jaylen Brown for like AD and something and yada yada and a pick or whatever. I don't know. That would be interesting. But yeah, hey, listen, I love these scenarios, but certainly really a lot of food for thought there, Jason. Thanks so much. Let's get to our next
Thanks,
one.
Jason.
Need to catch up here. So we have Daryl Thomas. Thank you so much, Daryl. Oh, my goodness. Really generous. Thank you. Thoughts on AD's play? They put him top 75 over Dwight Howard. Shake my head. No way an injured 38-year-old plays more minutes than you and want it more. Trade. So what are your thoughts on AD? Let me just throw out his numbers right now. AD tonight was 40 minutes, 6 for 15 from the field, 9 for 10 from the free throw line, 21 points, 14 rebounds, an assist and a steal, and 3 blocks.
Not enough. They needed him to be their best player every game, and that didn't happen. Yeah.
That's also part of the offensive thing where he has to rely on someone else to get him the ball and on every possession. Every time he scores, he has to rely on someone else to kind of run something to get him. Now, he can ISO at the elbow, which he'll do. But again, he kind of needs to make sure that someone gets in the ball, but then he needs to make sure he gets open and all that stuff. So, that might be a bit of a Darvin Ham thing too. You know, he might need to be like, guys, run this play and then run this play again. And let's feed him on the left. I can't picture him posting him on the left block tonight. Can you picture him?
No. And I think what frustrates people about AD is that the talent level is so high and it feels like he doesn't maximize it. Like, I think that's why people love Jimmy Butler and Jokic at this point so much, because they feel like they maximize their talent, right? Like, they got everything they could out of the talent that they have, and I feel like it's the opposite with AD.
Yeah, and anytime when it ratchets up and it gets more physical with him, he kind of just gets disconnected too, and sort of it's not really his game. He gets knocked on the floor a couple times, gets a little bit nervous.
Does he feel engaged? If you were coaching him, would you feel that he's engaged all the time?
No, Definitely not. And on both ends of the floor, defensively too. I mean, he was so good defensively for like the Warriors series. And I, you know, again, this is a whole other animal playing against the Nuggets. A lot more movement, a lot more like, you know, athletes who can attack and make you really have to deal. And then he, but he still made some good plays. Those three blocks were good. He really was able to have an effect, but not enough. I agree. And then offensively, yeah, you need him to have, you know, 28 points on high efficiency or something like that to keep him in these games. But again, there's a notion of what's he going to do? He's not getting the ball. But then again, the notion is, well, he's not calling for the ball or he's not commanding that post up, which you can kind of circumvent certain offenses, right? You can roll and get there and be there for them versus just sort of floating around and not getting the spots where you can score. So yeah, I never really was an AD fan, but I thought he did a really good enough job in the bubble that they got that title. And he hit that three. Remember that three he hit that was like maybe to beat Denver in the conference finals. Was that what it was? And which I thought, you know, it was like, whoa, here's a guy who's making real plays, real superstar plays. But ultimately, he's just not a guy you can rely on. Kawhi is not a guy you can rely on either, injury wise now. So it's time to move on.
So Daryl, great question, by the way. They put him top 25 over Dwight Howard. Do you believe? And he wrote basically shaking his head. So he's shaking his head. Do you believe that he's a higher level player than Dwight Howard, Coach Nick?
Man, it's rough because, you know, Dwight never had any kind of a perimeter game like AD does. So he's more skilled, I suppose. He's got more variable to his game. But Dwight was probably even more of a one-man wrecking crew on defense consistently than AD ever was. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. That's a tough one. I think that, you know, there's a bias towards what we saw from Dwight the last 5 years of his career. So you might forget like what he really was, which was a dominant center that could bring it like a team of a ragtag group of the guys to the finals.
Yeah, exactly. Like he carried a team more than AD ever did to the depth of the finals, even though, well, actually they won one together. So they both won a championship, but
yeah, that's true.
He could carry a team farther. It feels like on his own, not on his own. Obviously they had some really good players like Turkoglu and all these guys, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it was a good team around him, but you know, he was such a devastating force defensively, right? That I don't think AD has ever had that effect. But AD has more variation on it for the offense, so it's an interesting trade-off how you do that. It's close.
It's like the Charles Barkley thing. He was more of a bus driver, right, than AD was. Like LeBron was a bus driver. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's get – thank you, Daryl. J. Delgado, 216, thank you. Denver was better top to bottom with a lot of firepower, and it's mind-blowing how Ham only removed D'Lo from the starting lineup until the final game. I mean, listen, absolutely. In game two, I was watching with a coach friend of mine, and we were both thinking that we didn't know which team D'Lo was playing for. His shot selection was so bad. And yet he continued to get minutes in that game and then, you know, into the game three. So – really, really strange. I'm not really sure. You know, that could just really be very well be a rookie coach and nervous to make changes and know how D'Lo was going to react and didn't want to make it into a locker room problem. I don't know. But D'Lo, I thought, actually responded today. I thought he got in there and he seemed a little bit more engaged defensively. He was trying to make some plays and he made some shots on the offensive side. So that's probably the role he's supposed to have anyway, right? Come off the bench. I'm going to guess he played 19 minutes tonight. Let's see what he ended up playing.
He kind of got that super talented guy, to be honest. And it kind of reminds me of what we were just talking about, AD, when it comes to his demeanor. It's almost like the too cool type of thing, right? Like sometimes he doesn't show as much effort as he needs to.
Yeah, and it's not like he looks like that. Like Tracy McGrady looked like he wasn't trying when he was. Russell doesn't try. I mean, like, there's no question. There's times that he really doesn't, you know, he's not really trying. But he was the only Laker, one of only two Lakers that have a positive plus minus tonight in 15 minutes. I was pretty close. I said 19, 15 minutes of play time. So that's probably a good sweet spot on a really good team. Have him come off the bench, give him his 16 or 18 minutes, whatever, you know, get going and shoot, you know, shoot some threes, shoot some twos, maybe get a couple dimes and get him out of there before he really hurts you profoundly on the other end. So, yeah, that's the problem. But again, if you're a younger coach, I suppose, you know, there are adjustments. Maybe you have to learn over time to do that. You know, the lineup stuff is interesting to me because eventually I would imagine it's going to be all automated. It'll be AI generated in real time and you'll know exactly who to put in based on who's out there, what part of the the game, whether they're tired or not. You know, they have maybe they will have sensors that you're allowed to have on this on the uniform. You know what I mean? So I would love as a coach to take that part out of the equation, because it's still by gut. You just see coaches kind of making it up on the fly, and I feel like that's not as fair to the players. There's probably a better way to do it.
Maybe AI will be playing one day.
Oh, there you go. They'll install AI's brain into another player, and he'll play again. The Drew Show back. Thank you so much. Trading Brown for a shot at Scoot. Danny Ainge would. I don't know. Danny Ainge would never pull a trigger on any damn move. He had so many of those picks. They would never do anything with them. But have you watched Scoot play?
Yeah. I've watched Scoot play. But Danny Ainge pulled a good move. He got marketing in that deal back from that was good. Like, he did really well, I thought, with that move.
Trading Rudy Gobert was a good move. Applause for how many first?
Yeah,
I mean, yes. Anybody deal?
Yes, I've seen Scoot play.
Give me your thoughts. I really haven't seen him yet.
I mean, he has some high level potential. Like, his ceiling is really high. I like Brandon Miller a little bit better than him, and a lot of people would have Scoot at, you know, number two, but I would actually have Brandon Miller at number two. But, you know, he had
his stock was so high that if it wasn't for Wembanyama, he would have been number one. And then all of a sudden,
in most drafts, he'd be number one. You know, okay, he's kind of so like his athleticism is kind of the mold of like a Derrick Rose, John Wall.
Oh,
maybe not quite there, but he's really athletic. He can make shots. He's a playmaker. Nice handle. Can play both sides of the floors. Yeah, and it's improving. I mean, it's improving, and he got like. He could get his he got a bag, like he could score, but it was a little bit of a regression this season in the G League. He actually was a little bit better his first year in the G League, and he shut it down early, which was kind of weird. So he did have some injuries this year, but he has a really high ceiling. Like, he's really dynamic. He got that like speed like John Wall, Derrick Rose ish.
Wow. All right. I got to get my eyeballs on him. Once maybe the final start, I have some time to go look at some of the prospects, because we'll do some videos. But there you go. So would they trade Brown for a shot at Scoot? Like, I don't think so. I don't think you know what you have in Brown. And if you were going to trade him, I think you'd want to get something back that you already know is an existing commodity in the NBA. Right. That would be a tough one to, like, you know, really, unless it was Wembanyama. You never know what those crapshoot, picks are. I would rather do a trade for somebody known, known entity. So there you go. Drew Show, thank you so much. And here, oh my goodness, Aaron Walker, thank you. This is incredibly generous of a super chat. Like, I don't even know. Do you know Aaron Walker combo? He seems to know you.
Oh, I know Aaron. Yeah, I just saw him at the gym the other day. That's my guy, man. Shouts to Aaron. He was talking about our show, so I appreciate you, Aaron.
All right, well, he's throwing you some shekels for his man combo. So
thanks, Aaron. Appreciate you. Thank you. Him.
Wow, thank you. Well, I wish he had a question. We would answer it, but we'll just give him a high five and thank you. But if I see a question in there in the comments, just, you know, throw it in there. I'll grab it and we'll answer it anyway. Let's get to our next super chat. I'm sorry, we're so far behind, but these questions are so good that we want to answer them properly. But let's see here. We have Sean. Here we go. Sean, go back there. Sean Heige, should AD have been up with LeBron in the last 4 seconds? You mean that maybe that's set a ball screen? Is that what we're thinking?
I mean, is that enough time for all that? I guess so.
Let me go back. Let me see if I can see that last possession real quick. God, I might have to hold a button down. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go back far enough. But let me try this, dragging it. Is it not going to work? Come on. I'm trying to remember now what the final play was. Oh, you know what? I tweeted it out so I can watch it there real quick. Let's go to my profile. Should be my last tweet. Oh, where is it? Here it is. Okay. So LeBron curls. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you know what? That's a play they've run for LeBron a lot, where they curl him around at the top. So I guess the question then is, yeah, so he wants to know, should AD have been up with LeBron in the last 4 seconds? Again, what is that? Do you think that means, should he have pick and rolled with him?
Yeah, do you think there's enough time for all that?
Yeah, not really, because there's like 4 seconds.
Yeah, just so, like to properly set up a pick and roll and read it right, it takes some time, you know? It's all about reads and how you come off.
Yeah,
it.
I think they got a pretty good. Well, here's the thing about the last shot. Let's talk about that for a second, because when you get a last shot in the last possession to either tie or win the game, and you go to the basket, it really might not be worth it, honestly, unless it was like you had the quick lane, you can get it, like, you know, when LeBron did that play against Paul George and Paul George wigged out in Indiana and he got the layup because he got on the wrong side of him. But once you get into it where there's like bodies and it's crowded in there and the referees now have to get involved, it's a risk to do that. And that's what we saw happen here. Now, that was all clean, right? That when we saw the replay of that final shot by LeBron, like Jamal Murray was clean with his block and they were in, right? Right? I'm not crazy, am I? Mm-mm. So, you know, that's the problem. That's why you'll see ISOs from three, you know, or in the perimeter, because at least you'll get like a clean look and maybe you get a chance to hit it. You get in there. And especially at LeBron's age, that's the other problem, was I wouldn't have called that for LeBron like that. I mean, I guess they were hoping maybe they get a foul. But again, let's not forget, referees tend to swallow the whistles for good or for bad. You're really going to have to get mugged for them to call it. And LeBron, if anybody, knows that because they didn't call it for him against the Celtics earlier in the year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's tough to get in there and score, and then you got a chance to win if you do shoot the three. It's almost like pickup. Like, it's going to be harder to win the game on a drive or a post-up than hitting a three, even if it's a tough shot.
Absolutely. Well, we have another one from SJ, which is, let's see here, SJ, where'd you go? At 8:51. Oh, my goodness. We're so far behind. So many awesome comments, by the way. I'm seeing everybody in there. Let's get to SJ. Here it is. Now, there's no question – but
what kind of currency is it?
Is that the yuan or what is that? I don't know what that symbol is, but someone tell us in the comments.
Maybe it's dollar currency for dollar. That'd be good.
Yeah, right. Man, that'd be really nice if that was $7,500. it's Japanese yen. No, it's something that someone will tell us, I'm sure. But no question. But, you know, thank you
we
so much.
We appreciate you. Prayer yeah. Emoji right here. Prayer emoji for you.
There you go. And there you go. Thumbs up. You know, on the Google chat, you know, when you have the thumb, you know. Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you. And SJ, again, if you have a question you want to ask, just throw it in the comments and I'll try and find it. But knowing that there's 1,000 comments in here, I don't know if I'm missing anything. But that was his first super chat ever. So, again, we have a rookie. You know, he is now no longer a rookie. We have another one, though, from James. So if he was on a super chatter in the last show we had last night. So thank you so much, James. Let me get down there. Where will we find it here at 901? Oh my goodness gracious. Here we go. James Lemonis, thank you again. Again, super chatter galore. Do the Heat have a chance against the Nuggets?
Great question.
Love the question, especially as we're getting a little bit closer to the end of the show. What do you think, Combo?
How could I keep going against them, right? Like, you know, I always talk about how I love their coaching staff. A friend of mine's actually on their coaching staff. I love the way they play. Jimmy is playing like a top two player in these playoffs. Like, it's him and Jokic. They're moving the ball, the role players. We always talk, like, I keep saying, like, they're at a talent deficit, but maybe they're not. Maybe back then the people had it wrong who were recruiting him and drafting him. Maybe they all had it wrong, man. Maybe these guys' talent is way higher than I think. And I also do think that, you know, if Tyler Hero comes back eventually, that everybody, you know, everybody's saying they're playing better without him. Obviously, some of that's because of the defense. They don't have as many ducks. And then on offense, it's one, you know, he's a guy that doesn't really manage. He kind of just like goes. But I think him coming off the bench could actually give them a little bit of a boost and boost their ceiling. I love the way they're playing. And I can't say anymore that they have no chance. They have a chance. That's the answer to the question. They have a chance.
I'd be very wary, though, of bringing Hero back. He hasn't played. He's going to be rusty. It's going to disrupt all the chemistry. We saw that happen with the.
If he's healthy, you just say don't play, Tyler.
I would be. Maybe test out a little bit, you know, and get rid of it real quick. That ain't working. But we saw that happen with Orlando Magic when they went to the finals against the Lakers.
Ray for Alston, right?
No, I'm talking about who went to St. Joe's, the little point guard who's stocky.
Jameer Nelson,
thank you. Jameer, right? I'm pretty sure it's Jameer Nelson, who was terrific for them all year. Got hurt.
No, that's what I'm saying. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, Ray for Alston was the guy playing well for them. Yeah.
Right. Okay, I thought you'd do that. Right.
Because he's been on my pod. We talked about it. Yeah.
Okay. So he comes back, and it, I think it ended up not. It was just sort of disruptive. It kind of it didn't work as well as it had been working before without him. So I would be very wary of doing it, and really be quick to yank it if it's not working right away. And then again, I don't understand who's going to really guard Jokic. I mean, they'll throw Zeller out there to be some fouls and be physical. But, I don't know how Bam – can you picture Bam guarding him in the regular season? I have to go back and look at that footage.
Who, Jokic?
Yeah, Bam against Jokic.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy's going to have to – that's going to be a crazy mismatch. I mean, like, the problem is if Bam guards him, they have nobody help side. You saw how, like, Rui was guarding Jokic and you still had AD help side, which, I mean, obviously didn't work. They got swept, but it's better than what the Heat have defensively. To your point about the Magic, though, I feel like that's a little bit different because back then, like, point guards were really point guards and they controlled everything. I feel like Tyler could just be, like, a complimentary piece and not have the basketball every time like Jameer had in a way and just play off Jimmy, you know?
Fair enough. And by the way, if you listen to them carefully, when I guessed what that currency was, it was the won, the Korean won. So thank you.
Is it dollar to dollar?
It was. It's worth a little under $6. Is what he gave us. So again, very generous.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And I knew that they come through. So thank you, Riven and Daejin Seoul. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that, but forgive me if I didn't. Always great to get the good reference and the good information from the chat. Did the Heat have a chance? They have a chance. Again, we cannot pick against them anymore. I will not make that mistake again. It's just going to be a real interesting chess match to figure out how they want to deal with Jokic. I mean, you know, are you going to put Struce on him, you know, and like somehow front him, you know, and then maybe Bam can play the backside and tip away all the lobs they're going to try and throw to him in there.
Zeller, love.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you can't start Zeller, I don't think. Love. If Love is healthy, I don't know what his deal is now, but if Love is healthy, but you can't really rely on him. He's going to break down, you know, within one game, if he's going to have to get banged against Jokic for, you know, he'll give you what, 20 minutes tops. I don't know if he can handle that because Jokic is a load. So that's going to be a problem for them big time. Now they could zone it and stuff like that and then hope that they miss like they did in the first half of today's game. But that's a lot of hope. So I don't give them a huge chance. I probably give them, you know, maybe a 20% chance of winning the series against the Nuggets.
Yeah, I'll go 15-20. Also, maybe Spo has some tricks up his sleeve. We will see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the tricks would be. You could sandwich him. But again, you know, you'd pick like if Bruce Brown is in, you could ignore him and hope he doesn't do any damage because he can. But you hope like, you know. You got to pick one guy, right? And that's going to be like Bruce Brown, be the guy they have to try and, you know, ignore. Aaron Gordon would probably be the guy they would try to ignore and hope he doesn't cut, you know. But that's a lot of wishing and hoping. Martin Jose, best friend of the breakdown. Thank you so much, Martin. Denver got to run more plays for MPJ. It's interesting. Yeah. How many points did he have? Because let's see here.
I'd say around 15, right?
Yeah, he scored 15 exactly. He wasn't very efficient, 5 for 16 and 3 for 10 from 3. 10 boards, though. He was boarding really nicely. So, you know, I think he is so good offensively. He could just, in the flow, you know, get his 15, 20 points without, you know, too much trouble. If they were to run more for him and get him involved in the two-man game with Jokic a little bit, they don't really do that, right? I would love to see him get some pick and rolls with Jokic setting ball screens.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think the offense there would be less continuation with MPJ. It'll probably just be like handoff, shot up, right? Like with Jamal Murray, you go handoff, back handoff, pick and roll. Then you could get it to Murray. Then you could get it to, you know, MPJ. But if you go MPJ handoff, he's probably going to put that thing up.
Oh, yeah, and that's his role. But you never know. Yeah. I mean, I think you could put a lot of pressure on a defense with a maybe hand it off to MPJ into a ball screen from Jokic.
Fake handoff, Jokic might work, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think it would be nice because that action, that the pistol action or the 21 action that we talk about a lot is very interchangeable. You know, you could have Michael Porter Jr. being handing it off to Jokic coming around. You know, you could do all that stuff like that. So it would be fun to see them open that up and really make it difficult for the Heat to deal with or out of necessity have to do that because the Heat have really been taking them out of their normal stuff because they help. I mean, I can't believe how far they come off from one pass away to show, help. it really shouldn't work. But the Celtics are kind of broken in that way. They don't know how to attack that well. They're not reading it well. Here's the irony is the article we finally found out, by the way, I have been expressing for a year. We never figured out what happened in the middle of the year last year that made the Celtics go from a very average team to the finals, right? They just started passing the ball more. And you can see the stat numbers of the passing. It's just like an incredible, huge run. And then in the video you'll see tomorrow, what was fascinating was, is that they maintained that passing all the way through this year. So their offensive rating was second in the league, and they maintained their high passing numbers throughout the whole year. And as soon as the playoffs started, they drop precipitously. So they go from like 270 some passes per game to like 250. It's a huge drop off, you know, by a huge percentage. And it didn't bother them in the first two rounds. They still had a really high offensive rating because they were playing against, you know, the Hawks and the Sixers. Both are not very good defensive teams. But you go into the buzzsaw of the Heat defense, and all of a sudden, you're not moving the ball as much. You're not skipping it. You're not getting those open shots and that feeling, and you can't score. And their offensive rating dropped 8 points in this series, and they can't get easy shots. And then the more they do it, the more they miss, the more the defense slides up closer and closer and pushes up higher and higher. And then they really can't – now you can't get to the basket. And it's been a real fascinating series.
Do you think this was just the perfect matchup for the Heat? Is that what it was? Or, like, what do you think about that?
Certainly. I mean, like, who else in the East would have been tougher for them? Like, you know, because, like, I'm not a fan of Doc. So would Doc's teams, the way they're prepared on offense, like, do better? Probably not. You'd have needed, like, a Kings or a Warriors or, those are the teams that would really hurt the Heat defense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right. That kind of like that equal opportunity read and react type offense, right?
I would think so. I mean, because I would think when you do the isocentric stuff that like of Embiid, they would be able to bother him. He would do a spin. He'd be guys right on top of him as he's turning, and then they can knock the ball loose, whatever. And then, you know, the funny thing is like what I feel like Bam could do a better job one-on-one in the post against Embiid versus Jokic. That's an interesting question. I don't know. What do you think?
Who he could do better against?
Yeah.
I mean, player. I just think Jokic is a better player. I've been saying that all year. So I think for most guys, that's a tougher matchup. But Embiid is obviously like his ISO scoring game is elite. Like you can't take that away from him. Like he had a bad last game against the Celtics, but his just skill set as a scorer, like in the high post, down low, mid range, like his hezzy pull is phenomenal. Like he's a better like get in your bag scorer than Jokic. But Jokic is just such a better all around player, in my opinion, than Embiid.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, he's more of a beast down low. He's more of a low, Embiid is as big as he is. Embiid, you know, doesn't use it like that.
And also, Jokic picks his spots. Like, he won't do it every time. He does it when he has to, like this last play I'm watching right here where he made the same leg layup. Like, he kind of saves stuff like that for when he really needs it. He'll play calm, and then boom, like, you won't even be ready for it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're going to do one tomorrow, I guess, after the next game. We can talk about the coaching stuff going on in Milwaukee and across the league right now, because there's some interesting stuff. And maybe we'll get some more information by tomorrow. It's either Kenny Atkinson or Nick Nurse in Milwaukee. So we'll find out probably tomorrow
Who do you think is a better fit?
You know, that's a really good question. Either one is good, and they're equally out of the box thinkers. They're both probably going to have a similar feel to the Bucks as they're interviewing them. And so the only question is, do they want some of that Warriors shine? You know, that maybe that gives Kenny a little leg up. That said, there wasn't much of a shine because they didn't do so well in that last series against the Lakers.
The King, they did well with the Kings with the Mike Brown Warrior shine, right?
It did. And by the way, that would be a good argument for Kenny. So I don't know. I might lean for like maybe Kenny getting that job. We'll see. We got one more super chat and we got to wrap up.
All right.
Andre Henry, thank you. Thank you so much. Really, really generous. All of you guys have been really awesome. Thank you so much for the super chats. It really, really helps us keep the show going. Andre Henry wants to know, hey, Coach and Combo, what are your thoughts on blowing up Lakers and Celtics? Well, we already kind of talked about the Celtics. I think that they should blow them up. They should trade Marcus Smart. They should trade Jaylen Brown, and they're probably gonna have a new coach. And then they're gonna probably just sort of see what happens with Tatum building around him. If they can reload real quick, great. The East is still ripe. There's still opportunities to take the East if they want to, if they can figure that out. Now, the Lakers, actually, we talked about that, right? We talked about the trading AD. Right? That's what I would do. What about you? Would you do that?
I would definitely think about it. The problem is it's hard to do a full blow up when you have LeBron still playing.
That is true. That is true. Yeah. But I would. I would trade AD and no, obviously trade him for an all-star or two, whatever it is. You get like, you know, if you can't get that deal and you don't do it, but you get somebody great back in return. So at least there, that's like a little, you know, that helps you now. But you probably don't get a great big man in return. So that's the only problem. You need to get someone that can give you like 70-some percent of AD's production and then a great, you know, scorer.
I mean, everybody talks about how, you know, the big man is more obsolete than ever, but you need them to play basketball, like in the NBA. So it's not like you could trade AD and not get a big back. I totally agree with you. But that's a good question, Andre. It's going to be interesting to see what they do in the offseason.
Yeah, but I think the Celtics do. I think they're going to do something. And the Lakers, it's probably 50-50, but depending on what kind of deal they can put together. But I would take a really – if I were Pelinka, I would take a really long look at that if they got some offers for AD and really consider it, you know. Now, you have to deal with LeBron, too, and if LeBron would agree to it, because I think he would probably get sign off on it as well. And that's an interesting question. But so that's why it would have to be a splashy, you know, something splashy. But if anybody could do it, the Lakers could.
Pelinka saved his job getting to the Western Conference Finals, shaking up the roster with those moves at the trade deadline.
Rightfully so. Absolutely. What he did there by addition and subtraction was huge and got them as far as they got, as far as they probably could have gotten. So, well, I think we've gotten as far as we can go. It's late for you. It's getting late for me. I got this damn video and I haven't eaten all day. But Combo, thanks so much for hanging out with us and staying up late.
Anytime, Coach Nick.
And everybody in the super chats, I can't thank you enough. It's the list is almost it's already too long, but you know who you are. We'll see you back here tomorrow after the game four of was probably going to be a sweep between the Heat and the Celtics, and we will find out how accurate that is. But don't forget, sports fans, the B-Ball Breakdown. We're not a channel; we're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Combo?